right, welcome to this week's episode of Double Line Minutes. I'm Jeff Mayberry with Mark Kimbrough.
Hey.
Just after the close here, February 23rd. Well, let's get into the where are we for the week. It seemed like it was a pretty quiet week in the overall. Obviously, there's some big earnings news out there that seemed to drive a lot of the equity market. But we did end the week with the S&P up 1.7%. Looks like it closed today at 50.88. Is that an all-time high? It is an all-time high, just above the 50.87 that we had yesterday. So up 1.7% or so. Looks like the big consumer staples was the big winner on the week, up just over 2%. Materials up just under 2%. The loser, let's see, everything, all 11 sectors of the S&P were positive. The big loser was energy, up only 50 basis points or so. Then the second loser, communication services and real estate, up just under 1%. So it's a pretty good week when your biggest losers are up 50 basis points and then a percent on the week. If we do look at the Russell 1000, came in at 1.7% on the week, actually small cap. So the Russell 2000 down 0.8% on the week, growth up 1.75%, and value up 1.5%. Just in line there. So value right in line with the S&P equal weight there at 1.5%. Looks like from a year to date. So here we are almost, I guess next week is the end of February. So almost 2 months into the year, we're already up 7% on the S&P 500 and communication services up almost 10% on a year to date basis through here, February 23rd. As I did mention, pretty quiet week in bonds. A little bit of a movement today, but we did end the week with the 10-year at 4.25%. That's down 3 basis points on the week from 4.28 last week. Looks like also the 2-year was up 5 basis points to 4.69 and the long bond at 4.37. So you still have all the, you know, from 2s to long to 30s all on that 4 handle. Looks like the 2-year 2s-10s curve steepened or inverted a little bit more, down 44 basis points today. What did that mean for the bond market? With the 10-year down 3 basis points, the 2-year up 5, that led the ag to be up about 25 basis points or so, so a quarter point. Governments up about similar amount. Mortgages was the big laggard, a flat on the week, but with investment grade corporate bonds up about half a point. Your kind of riskier sectors did better, with high yield up 35 basis points, bank loans up 35 basis points, and emerging markets up 0.75%. So all positive across all 11 sectors of the S&P 500, all of the kind of broad fixed income sectors that we do track here, all positive on the week. Looks like the ag's down almost 2% there on a year-to-date basis, with mortgages being the worst performer, down 2.25%. But pretty big, not much going on. I show that obviously Monday was a holiday, so it was a shortened week, but didn't have much change in yields across the board. A little bit of a rally today to get you that on the 10-year, at least to get you that down three basis points on the week. We turn our attention over to commodities. Commodities were down on the week, let's say. Bloomberg Commodity Index down 0.75%, so about 0.78%. Ags was the big loser, down 2.5%. Energy down 1.5%. The big winner here was industrial metals, up 1.5%. Precious metals up 50 basis points or so, and livestock up 1%. Looks like WTI crude has ended the week down 2.3% at 76.5. So still with that in that 70 level or 70 handle, let's say. So moving around there, copper was up 1.5%, and gold was up 1.35% on the week. Ends at 2037. So with the industrial metals up 1.5, gold, or precious metals, sorry, up 50 basis points, gold up 1.5, kind of shows you silver being the other precious metal there, turned in a pretty weak week for the week ending here, February 23rd. Mark, I don't know if, I was in and out of the office again, or in and out of being in front of the computer again all week. So I don't know if you have anything else to add from the market's perspective, or you want to hop right into the macro side of things.
Yeah, I'm not going to mention the name, but the big talk of the week is the big stock that everyone's been focused on. So that's, I don't want to give it any more air, but that was one of the big moments of the week, it felt like, earnings.
Yeah, kind of propped up the whole market. Everyone was looking, seemed like everyone was waiting for Wednesday afternoon or afternoon East or West Coast time to see what those earnings would be, and you kind of had a ripping market from there.
Yeah, they did not disappoint. I mean, we're all long one way or the other, as it seems like right now with that.
That's right.
But yeah, aside from that, going to the economic week, as you said, it was a slow week on the holiday shortened week. We started off Tuesday with the LEI, the leading economic index for January. This came in month over month at negative 0.4% versus an estimate of negative 0.3%. Not much, you know, difference there. But what we do have is that resulted in the year over year number increasing to a negative 7.0. Not going to talk too much about this. I mean, all in all, these numbers are weak, but we're going to get into the LEI in more depth as our topic of the week. So I'm going to leave that be for now. on Wednesday, we had the FOMC meeting minutes getting released. You know, Fed still sees rates as restrictive. And they see rates as restrictive, and they're trying to reinforce the concept of patience. I mean, those are two kind of main takeaways from the minutes, which is in line with the press conference. There's a section talking about risk management and different members speaking to just the risks of acting too early or acting too late. But all in all, again, the central point is patience. They want to make sure that inflation is durably going to stay at that 2% target and having confidence of it before they make a move.
I think that's good, though, that they're at least discussing both sides of things. You know, it's not just I guess, you know, they always want you to feel like in the minutes that they're discussing everything, that there's a little bit more back and forth. They're not all a kind of groupthink going in the same direction. Because when you look at the moves at the end of after the meeting, it's tended to be very unanimous, at least mm-hmm. in the Jay Powell Fed times. So it's good for them to at least show in the minutes that there is some discussion. It's not just all everyone going in the same direction.
Yeah. Even if they end at the same conclusion, yeah, they're still having the active discussion to get there. So yeah, it is, they're not all just rowing in the same direction in terms of their opinions.
Right.
next up on this slow week, we had Thursday. We had initial continuing claims, both those coming out, initial for the week ending February 17th. This was the second lowest initial claims prints in the past year plus. It came in at 201,000 versus estimates of 216,000. To smooth out the volatility in these numbers, we'd like to look at the four-week moving average, which came out to a rounded 215K. A point I've been kind of trying to highlight and that I kind of like is since January 2022, you look at that four-week moving average of initial claims and you take a trend line of it, your slope is basically zero. There's been no trend. It has been flat lines, initial claims have not budged. You've had wiggles and jiggles, but on the trend, it's been stable for 2+ years. Looking to continuing claims for the week ending February 10th, you have a print of 1.862 million versus an estimate of 1.884 million. Similar story here. There was a bit of a run up at the end of summer through the fall last year, but since then it's kind of stabilized and we have a 4-week moving average there of, let's just round it up and call it 1.9 million, but basically right in line with the prints that we're getting.
It doesn't seem like that's the labor market's not weakening enough for us to really start to get worried about recession, at least, you know, based on these the jobless numbers we get every week.
Great. I mean, the wage growth is there. Job numbers are there. It's if people are still making money and people are still employed, people will still spend. The economy can move forward. All those pieces are still in place for now.
Yep.
going also on Thursday, we had the S&P Global US PMIs. This was the February prelim numbers. Both metrics, they remain in expansion. The manufacturing number peaked its head up last month. But, you know, let me just give you a quote here from the report. This is the early PMI data for February indicate that the U.S. economy continued to expand midway through the first quarter, pointing to annualized GDP growth in the region of 2%. Although service sector growth cooled slightly, manufacturing staged a welcome return to growth, with factory output growing at the fastest rate for 10 months. So I'm highlighting that quote because as of late, at least with the S&P Global PMIs, they've been showing this relative softening in the services sector, still holding above 50. But the manufacturing side has started to show signs of life, like it's potentially coming around the corner. I haven't seen much other data to corroborate that, but we do have prints for this particular index above 50, which would indicate expansion. And that closed up our short week for the economic side.
Yeah, it is. It was a short, quiet week. We do get ISM manufacturing next week, so we'll talk about that next week, next Friday. It looks like it is estimated to be 49.5, so right there on the cusp of being above 50. So it'll be interesting to see whether the ISM manufacturing number kind of corroborates what we're seeing from the S&P Global side of things. Mm-hmm. If we took a peek over at what's the Fed funds futures market pricing in for the Fed, I remember earlier in the year we were pricing in, or the market was pricing in, like six rate cuts this year. The hotter little inflation number that we got last week kind of tempered some of that. Fed speak tempered some of that. We're up to a 2% chance now of a Fed rate cut. So pretty much zero. That's pretty much just noise there on a rate cut here on the March 20th meeting. More interestingly, at least to me, the May 1st meeting is now down to a 20 or 19% chance of a cut. So looking at no cuts here in the next two meetings. And then June 12th is the meeting after that. And that's a 58% chance of a cut. That's the first time we get above 50% on a Fed rate cut. And we're down to 3.28 rate cuts this year. So almost in line with what the Fed was thinking in their December meeting of three Fed rate cuts. We'll see. We do obviously get new dots here after the next meeting. So we'll see if the Fed sticks with their three rate cuts in the latter half of the year, or they kind of dial back to two. Because I don't think it doesn't feel like they're going to go to more aggressive rate cuts. So we'll see whether they stick at three or two. But market kind of coming back to where the Fed was thinking in December.
It was kind of a wild ride. Didn't we peaked near what, 6.5 or so? Was it close to 7 rate cuts? Was at I guess peak dovishness?
Yeah. And you know, we've always been of the idea that, you know, that was being a little bit aggressive. And you know, I guess 3 now seems more in line. So there's not really a way to kind of either go one way or the other on that. I think it seems like the market's pricing in a pretty fair, I guess from our assessment, or from my assessment anyway, a pretty fair amount of rate cuts for the year. All right, let's move on to the topic of the week here. And as you mentioned earlier, Mark, we did get the LEI out there. It did come in at negative 0.4. It's at negative 7.0 now year over year. And you know, usually when we do look at the LEI, when we talk about it every month, when that number comes out, we say, oh, well, it's, you know, below zero, that portends a recession. If you look back at the chart of the LEI year over year, at least, you know, we look at it over the past, you know, 20 plus years, you get 3 recessions. It always has turned negative right in front of the recession. And so that we use that as our recession indicator. I think that's been a known, or that's kind of what the conference board has been saying is here, when you look at the leading index, if it goes negative, look out, recession. And it's been negative since July of 2022. I know Sam and I did a podcast way, way back on LEI on episode 29 on August 20th of 2021. We need to talk about, you know, kind of the leads and lags of the LEI and signaling a recession. And certainly, you know, there are some false starts where the LEI goes negative and you don't get a recession right away, or it can go negative and turn back positive and you don't get a recession. But certainly at the negative 7 level that we're at today, and we've been at, you know, below negative 5, at least kind of since, you know, went from in July of 2022, it went negative and it's been pretty negative since then. And so it's not like it's just slightly negative. It's a very large negative. And we do look at, you know, the 6-month annualized number, just to kind of see where the trend is moving. Today, the 6-month annualized is at negative 6. Did tick down a little bit there. It was kind of moving back up closer to negative 5 as a negative 6. So historically, you'd look at that and say, okay, the LEI still saying recession, still saying that, you know, all the inputs, the 10 inputs that the LEI uses, I think it's 10 inputs that they use, are still signaling recession. Now, what was interesting is in the, and Mark, I'll let you get into the details that you were kind of digging up here. But in their release of the LEI, the Commerce Board did say, I'll quote it here. It says, while the declining LEI continues to signal headwinds to economic activity, for the first time in the past 2 years, 6 out of its 10 components were positive contributors over the past 6-month period, ending January 2024. As a result, the leading index currently does not signal recession ahead. While no longer forecasting a recession in 2024, we do expect real GDP growth to slow to near 0% over quarter 2 and quarter 3, end quote. And so I think it's interesting that they've gone from saying if it goes negative, we're getting a recession. And then, you know, they kind of do say that for the first time in the past 2 years, that it's not signaling, or they're not seeing a recession now, but they've changed their way of looking at it to what factors or the number of factors that are contributing to the negative or positive side of things. So you want to hop into what those factors are, Mark, and kind of what they're looking like right now?
Yeah. So they're treating this, again, like you said, it's a diffusion index. There's 10 different metrics, and they're seeing, hey, we got 6 out of 10 are positive over the last 6 months, no recession. Looking at those, let's start with the 6 that they're saying are in good shape. We have average weekly initial claims for unemployment insurance. We talked about that. It's, you know, they've been low, they've been positive, and they've been strong. Manufacturers' new orders for consumer goods and materials. Manufacturers' new orders for non-defense capital goods, excluding aircraft. Building permits for new private housing units. The S&P 500 index of stock prices and the leading credit index. So of those 6, those 6 are strong. The other 4 that we have that are negative are average weekly hours for manufacturing, ISM new orders index, the interest rate spread of the 10-year treasury to the Fed funds rate, and average consumer expectations for business conditions. Now, what stood out as so interesting about these numbers is they all have weightings that are, you know, there's, let's just say each of them is given a weight, and it's related to them doing a look back period of volatility going back, I believe, to 1990 to come up with estimated weights for choose factors. What's interesting about it is the 6 factors that are positive only account for 31% of the index. The other 69% are the ones that are all negative. That disconnect right there would help explain why that year over year, so effectively a weighted number, is so low, while they're saying, no, don't look there, no recession to be seen. That just jumped out right there. I mean, a lot of these indicators are manufacturing related, and manufacturing has been in somewhat of a recession almost, you'd say, over the last year and a half. So this index looking very weak from a manufacturing perspective makes a lot of sense. But now we're starting to, you know, see little parts of it peak up. There's some manufacturing data that's starting to improve, like I mentioned from the market PMI report. There's little hints of manufacturing thawing, and we're seeing that in these smaller weighted measures within the LAI. But again, when you take it from this diffusion angle, they're saying we got 6, so we're not calling for a recession.
I mean, and I guess it makes sense that, you know, and we've talked about this in the past, where the conference board will go back and they will change their weights. They will adjust their weights based on kind of, you know, new information. Kind of one of the things that we always want to make sure we look at is when we look at past data, that also changed when they changed the weights. So, you know, it's maybe not as indicative of a recession today or back then because they changed the weights, and so they make it fit better. I do think that you're right that it is very much heavy on the manufacturing side of things, whereas now the services side of the economy is much larger. So maybe the manufacturing certainly has a smaller weighting in the overall economy. And as you said, Mark, you know, we've kind of almost been in a manufacturing recession. The ISM manufacturing PMI has been below 50 for I don't know how long. It feels like hasn't been above 50 for a long time. And really, when we look at it, that could be why the LEI has been negative and we haven't gotten an overall recession. Now, I think it's kind of shady to use, you know, kind of for them to change the goalposts here, where it's not actually a negative year over year number that is recession, but a number of contributors. Because if that's the case, then why calculate the year over year? Why include these different weightings? When something that, or even though there's 6 that are, you know, make up only 31% of the index, does that really mean that we're not going to get a recession? So I think that I would take what they're saying with a grain of salt, a huge grain of salt there, because it seems like they're changing the goalposts. And really, when you're looking at it, if you want to take the contrarian side of things, when people start changing the goalposts, when they start changing things and start thinking about things a little differently, is that the indicator that we're at the top, that we're actually going to get, you know, that would increase in my mind the probability of us getting a recession, because people are starting to make excuses for why things aren't reacting the way they were or the way they think they would.
It's like that moment of capitulation. It's the moment of change.
That's right. And so I would say that, you know, we're going to keep looking at the LEI. We're going to keep looking at it on a year-over-year basis, look at the 6-month number just to see where the trend is going. And really, you know, we may talk about the number of factors the factors or the contributors that are positive or negative, just to see how that looks. But I think, this time is never different. So we want to make sure we keep an eye on the things that worked in the past, until they stop working. Just like when we're looking at, people were saying the 2s 10s curve inverted. That doesn't mean anything anymore. That doesn't mean it's going to be a recession until we actually don't get a recession and the 2s 10s curve inverts and then uninverts and there's no recession. I would say we're going to stick with the indicators that have worked in the past, and until we're proven wrong.
Much like the Fed, just to, you know, expressing a little patience.
All right. I mean, I guess that makes sense. Let's. I'm going to listen to some Guns N' Roses here after we're off the podcast. With that, you want to hop on to the things to keep an eye on for next week. At least it's a little bit busier week next week.
Yeah, we do have some more economic pieces coming out. It is more active week. We again have a reprieve on Monday of anything that's overly interesting, and we have some economic data points. But move forward to Tuesday, where we get durable goods orders. This is the January prelim data. The headline number, it's generally extremely volatile. It's estimated to come out at -5% versus a prior of 0. It includes things like aircrafts and transportation. You buy a couple planes or you don't buy a few planes, or you buy a lot of them. That creates some significant volatility in these numbers. So we look to a number called durables X transportation, and that's estimated to come in at 0.2% versus a prior of 0.5%. You know, just to say, not exactly corroborating much of the strength narrative coming out of the S&P Global US PMI, quote, but it's a month delayed, so we'll see what happens. On Tuesday, we get S&P CoreLogic home price appreciation numbers for all the way back in December. The 20-city measure is expected to come in at 0.20%, up from a prior 0.15%. That would bring the year-over-year measure up to 6.00 flat. One point to note on that is from April last year, 2023 through October, so 7 months, we had an average 0.80 month over month HPA gain for the 20-city measure. That's pretty robust, which has helped give us this, you know, elevated year-over-year number again. We have two more negative month-over-month roll-off numbers in the pipeline, so expect, you know, in a month or two, you're going to be seeing 6, 7, 8%, but now it's still at 7 and change on the year-over-year number, potentially. moving forward, I guess, to the last measure from Tuesday, we have the Conference Board Consumer Confidence Measure. This is for February. It's estimated to come in at 115.0, up from a prior of 114.8. Not much movement there. You don't get any right now. I didn't see any estimates for the present situation or expectations, the combo pieces that go into it. But just want to mention, last month, we did have a very substantial improvement in the assessment of the present. and the expectations measure has been hovering above 80, improving, actually, which would indicate, historically, per their measurements, that would suggest we're not supposed to be seeing a recession, or at least consumers are not expecting a recession down the line. So getting that little soft landing, no landing situation from a consumer expectations soft data survey.
And I guess the consumers will keep spending and keep us out of recession. So
yeah,
self-fulfilling prophecy.
Indeed. Next up, we have Wednesday. We got Q4 GDP. It's the second estimate. Expected to be unchanged at 3.3%. We did, just as a reminder, Q3 was another booming. These are quarter over quarter annualized rates. Q3 was 4.9%. So there's no change expected for their second estimate, but it's nice to keep an eye on in case anything material changes. On Thursday, we have personal income and personal spending. This is back for January. Personal income is expected to come in at 0.3% versus a prior of 0.3%. This is basically in line with where it's been for the last 9 months. It's been in a range of 0.2, 0.4. So just steady as she drifts there. personal spending is expected to come in at 0.2%. It's a decent decline from the prior of 0.7%. I mean, we had a strong holiday season. personal spending in December was up 0.7% and November was up 0.4. So a little pullback and a little payback is extremely reasonable. We also just had, it was last week, a kind of weak retail sales number, which it correlates pretty strongly with personal spending. So it's understandable to have a low estimate on this.
Yep.
Also on Thursday, we have the PCE numbers, the Fed's favorite inflation measure. Let's focus on core. Core is estimated to come in at 0.4% versus a prior of 0.2. That would bring the year-over-year measure down to 2.8% from prior of 2.9. You know, while the year-over-year measure is falling, 0.4%, you annualize that is not putting us on a path to 0.2. just one data point. So, you know, does not make a trend, but those are not the kind of thing. Those are the kind of data points that give the Fed, I'm sure, a little reassurance in their patience angle when it comes to inflation. Also on Thursday, we have just the standard initial jobless claims. Nothing really to see there again. It's been steady. And then Friday, we have, as maybe I mentioned earlier, we have the ISM U.S. manufacturing number estimated to come in at 49.5 versus prior 49.1. Just said it's been below 50 for over a year. So, you know, at least we're off the summer lows, but that still has yet to fully recover. And that's all we have on deck for next week.
Thanks, Mark. I think that one of the things that we've been looking at here at Double Line is we just did another one of our LinkedIn blog posts from our macro asset allocation team, and they coincidentally just put out their piece for this week. Really, just mentioned that the last month was the end of a 16-month streak. This is global manufacturing PMI that J.P. Morgan puts together. But this is the first time in 16 months that we're not in contraction territory from the global manufacturing side of things. So wouldn't surprise me if the U.S. starts to kind of pick up some steam here also on the back of that. So check out that blog post over there on LinkedIn that our team does, or the other half of our team does over there for that blog post. But with that, I think that wraps it up. I'd like to thank everyone for listening.
Yes, thank you to all our listeners out there today on Monday Morning Minutes. Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. You can pick up the latest episode each Monday before the bell. Monday Morning Minutes is available on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. Hit us up on Twitter at DLine Minutes and send us your questions. Or send us an email at minutes@doubleline.com with any questions, comments, or suggestions.
Yeah, don't forget to check out our website, doubleline.com. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/doubleline capital. We have a couple of Jeffrey Gundlach interviews up there, one on macro insights. It's 21 minutes. Another from Jeffrey's appearance on CNBC's Closing Bell earlier this week, or I think it was last week. And also we have Ken Shinoda on a podcast talking residential and agency mortgages. I thought that one was interesting. Oh, Ken always has some good insights there. Make sure to follow the other podcasts there that hopefully Jeff and Sam will continue doing there. Make sure to follow them at Sherman Show Pod. I'd like to thank everyone for tuning in and have a great weekend.
This presentation was recorded on the date indicated. Views and opinions expressed herein are those of the individual and do not necessarily reflect the views of Double Line Capital LP, its affiliates, or employees. Should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities and are subject to change without notice. Double Line has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. The presentation represents Double Line's intellectual property. No portion of this presentation may be published, reproduced, transmitted, or rebroadcast in any media in any form without the express written permission of Double Line. Double Line has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. To receive permission from Double Line, please contact media@doubleline.com. Neither Double Line nor any of its affiliates makes any representations or warranties regarding the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this material. Liability, including any direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage, is explicitly disclaimed. Double Line is not providing any financial, economic, legal, accounting, or tax advice. The receipt of this presentation by any listener should not be construed as the provision of investment advice by any Double Line entity or individual, nor does it imply that such person becomes a client of any Double Line entity. The portfolio risk management process includes an effort to monitor and manage risk, but it does not imply low risk. Copyright 2023, Double Line Capital.